This is CliffCentral.com.
It is such a pleasure to meet you.
Yes, you too.
I first of all got to tell you, Hidden Figures, just an incredible magnum opus, a beautiful work of art, something that I think tells a story that so many people in the world didn't know about, and you were just sterling.
Thank you.
So it was a real pleasure to watch that. And then obviously Empire, which is why you're here. Mm-hmm. And I just want to give a little intro for people who might not know, but you're an Academy Award nominee. I mean, as badass as ever as Cookie Lion. Season 5 already of Empire. Can you believe it's been that long?
I can't even believe it. It went by too fast. It's like the kids growing up.
Yeah.
Lucius is getting old. Cookie's never going to get old.
No, Cookie's made of something special.
Yes.
She's made of something immortal.
Yes. And
just another notch in your unbelievable year is that you have voiced an animated character, yes, in Disney's Ralph Breaks the Internet. Mm-hmm. What Women Want is due out next year.
Yes.
And Boris Lawrence Henson Foundation, that's the foundation that you started in the name of your father.
Mm-hmm.
Which is apparently going to and is already doing some incredible work for mental health,
mm-hmm.
something which often gets left out of people's conversations, which often gets treated differently to other things that people have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk a little bit about that if you're comfortable with
sure.
it. But for starters, Empire, I mean, what a roller coaster. You must have had a lot of fun. When you saw the script for the first time, did you go, "All right, this is for me"?
No. actually... When I saw the script for the first time, I was like, I didn't want to do it. It scared the life out of me because yeah. I thought this is going to typecast me because I was known as the edgy girl in Hollywood. Mm. She's edgy. She's, you know, I'd go on an audition. She has too much edge. And I'm like, edge? What? How I walked in the room? Because I know I didn't play the character like that. She's a corporate worker. Like, I can't be edgy in corporate America. So I know I did my homework.
Mm.
So you're judging me from the room, but whatever. So, you know, that's always been my fight in this industry. And that's why I was so glad when Ted Melfi reached out to me for Katherine Johnson. I was like, and you know, when I got Benjamin Button,
absolutely.
She wasn't edgy. You know what I mean?
No, but maybe by edgy, they meant it as almost a backhanded compliment because maybe it's more of a, you know, often people want to have an edge.
Well, yeah, but they wouldn't give me the roles.
Yeah,
they
well.
They would try to
well,
typecast
Well, they've learned their lesson, haven't they?
Yeah, well, hello. well, that's the thing, like coming from Baby Boy and, you know, something on primetime network television, I was like, do I want to do this for 7 years and then, you know, be in danger of pigeonholing myself, you know? But actually, I started reading. I don't know if that was an excuse because I was so scared, you know? Mm. And then when I started really peeling back the layers, I was like, whoa, she's very complex. And I was like, in this family deal and the issues that they're dealing with, I was compelled because I'm an artist who I would like to touch all of humanity in a positive way. You know, uplift humanity, drop some good gems to change someone's life in a positive way. Sometimes those characters aren't so pretty, you know. Life isn't pretty, you know. People are complex. They're complicated, you know. And I thought, wow, this will be a different muscle to stretch because look at all that she has, you know. And then once I started looking at her as a human and not judging her, see, usually when I get scared, it's because I'm judging.
Yeah.
I'm judging.
But isn't that true for all of us?
Oh, absolutely.
And the more we get to know each other and the more we find out about people who we think we don't like, the more we realize actually we probably like them, we just don't know enough.
But see, that's why representation is important.
Absolutely.
And that's why this show was important. And that's why every movie I do is important, because I want to show every kind of black woman there is. So there's no, oh, black women are all like this.
They're all like that, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's important. It's important every culture, for everybody, it's important.
And we are dealing with that in this country all the time as well, because people like to put you in a box and people like to say, you know, all women are like this, all black women are like this, all black women who grew up poor are like this. And I was reading through your biography and it's stunning to me how, I mean, you didn't have an easy ride.
Mm-mm.
And a lot of people these days, you know, they claim that they had it tough and they've been through it. You went through a lot. I mean, with your dad, mm-hmm. who was, he suffered PTSD. Mm-hmm. He was an alcoholic.
Abusive.
Mm-hmm. I mean, these are not things that are usually a great setup to someone having enormous confidence and being able to tackle the things that you've tackled. And where do you think that confidence came from?
It came from because my dad was very vocal about his faults and his flaws, as we all have them. And I'm getting goosebumps because my mom is in the room. And, you know, she suffered a very abusive relationship with my dad. And what I love about that woman over there is she is the epitome of unconditional love. She's never said a bad word about my father. Never. Never. And because she allowed me to find out on my own. And you know what happened? My father told me. And then I went to my mother and I was like, Mom, why didn't you ever tell me any of this? And she said, because I never wanted to destroy. You need your father. You know what I mean? And most women would become bitter and angry. My mother never shut down to love. She stayed open to love. I mean, that woman there is something special. She really is. I'm getting emotional.
This is making me emotional. But I'll tell you, maybe we should stop the interview here and get your mom over. I mean, Taraji, nice to meet you. Look, I think what you're hitting on here is such a big issue. Also here in South Africa,
own your story.
Sure, but here we have a major problem in South Africa with fatherlessness, and there are so many young women and men who grew up without that male role model in their lives, and usually, it's not their fault. I mean, it's incredible how wrong things can go for good people, you know. Mm-hmm. But to be able to handle it in that way, and for your mom to have the foresight to have allowed a good influence, but prevented the really harmful stuff from happening to you is just such a, that's a genius. That's a move of emotional EQ, just like very few people have.
Yeah, my mom was great in that way. I mean, even we lived in the hood, but she didn't just keep me in the hood. She exposed me to other things, and I don't even really know if she knew that that's what she was doing at the time. I think at the time, it pretty much probably she needed a break from me because I was a lot. But what she was doing was getting me out of the hood, getting me out of my zip code. Once she did that, I knew, oh.
Yeah.
It's a whole big world out there, you know? And so I owe that to her because I was never afraid. Do you know how many kids I know that came from the same hood that I came from, never been downtown, or they never crossed the DC line? They just stayed in the hood. That's all they know. I tell kids that I speak at risk youth, I always say, get out of your zip code. Just get on the bus and just take a ride. And just once you get out of that place, you get to meet new people, different people who have different stories than where you come from. You're like, hey, I like where you go. Maybe I'll visit there someday. Then you get to dream, you know? But if you stay locked in your cage, how can you dream? How? You got to get out in the world, be in and of the world. Even if it's just in another zip code.
I think your characters in all of the shows and the movies that you've been in are also an open door for people to walk through and figure out things about themselves. And you said it yourself that you want to represent different kinds of black women and you want to represent different kinds of people.
Yeah, exactly.
And certainly that's a very lofty goal, because a lot of people in the acting business will take a role, you know. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you've got to a point also where you're now in charge of your own destiny, and you can choose what you'd like to do and what you don't want to do.
Yes.
You can make it matter. Mm-hmm. And that's no small achievement. I mean, do you look back on your life now, because by no means have you necessarily reached the highest point yet, but you're certainly right up there.
Right.
You look back on your life now and go, this is just unbelievable. I have to pinch myself.
Yeah, I do. I still pinch myself sometimes. Like when I got offered What Men Want, the president of the studio, Brian Robbins, got on a plane to come to me in Chicago. Usually they make you come to them. I was like, the president of Paramount is coming to see me. And that I had to pinch myself. I was like, okay, wow, I'm really green lighting films. You know, I had a Christmas special on Fox for 3 seasons. And it was so invigorating to walk on that set and look around and see all of these people working and know that they have jobs right before the holidays because of me. That is a feeling that I can't even explain.
It's a lot of pressure, though.
It's a responsibility.
Right.
It's a responsibility. And I know that. I'm very clear on that.
I got to ask you something very obvious. Maybe this is a stupid question, but
no such
thing. To me, the hardest thing, it seems, from the point of view of someone who's not an actor, mm-hmm. is how you learn all those damn lines. I mean, you've got to learn a new script every other day, and sometimes you have to learn pages and pages for a day. Mm-hmm. How do you get that into your head? That's a huge task. I couldn't do that. I can't even remember three lines. I can't remember how I was meant to introduce you today.
You
I had to write that down.
You totally could do it. You can't make it about the lines. It's not about the lines. It's what's going on. It's what's underneath the lines. When you know that stuff, the lines come. It's easy when you know that. The lines come. I've been playing Cookie for so long that I don't even look at the scenes the day before. And I will go on a set and I'm, oh my gosh, she got 4 pages of dialogue. But because I know her and yeah. I know the family and I know the story, I read the script, but I don't toil over every scene that I have to do the next day. I don't do that anymore because I know her now, you know. What's important for me is understanding why she's even saying what she's saying. The words are nothing. We say words all the time, but what do those words mean? I could be saying I love you, looking you dead in your face by stabbing you in the back at the same time. Happens a lot in life, doesn't it?
And an empire. Yes. And an empire.
Yes, you know, so see, words don't mean anything. You can't make it about the lines.
I wonder what, just looking back again, I wonder what your dad might say about what you've done.
He'd probably say, I'm not, this ain't nothing. You ain't even scratched the surface yet.
Wow. Tell me about the foundation and what you do there.
Well, the foundation was literally born out of necessity. I've had tragedy in my life and trauma, and my son too. His father was murdered, and then my dad died 2 years later. And then he's like, who? I remember the first day he came home from school after my dad passed, and he was like, Mom, today we were supposed to make a Father's Day card, and I had no one to make one for. So, becoming a young black man in America is hard. And when you don't have a man to look up to or talk your troubles out with or your complications out, it's hard. And
I promise you, I didn't want to make you cry.
I know, but it's something that needs to be talked about. It's okay.
Yeah.
And I'm not a man. I don't know how to teach him how to be a man. It was a struggle. And so he started having issues and dealing with his father's death and why. And it came time to look for help. And it was difficult. You know, he's having issues about becoming a black man in America. And you're a nice man. But if he sits on the opposite side of the sofa and tries to talk to you, he's going to hold back. Because of a lot of his issues, the people look like you. And you may not. You may come in peace. You know, but see, when you don't have a man to talk to about that, I can't tell him. You know what I mean? It's different coming from a woman. And then he gets to an age point where it's like, you're a girl. You don't know. You know, so it was time to look. And so when I started looking, it's like, I got to find somebody African-American. And I started looking and it was hard. It was like looking for a unicorn. Then I talked to my best friend who is the executive director of my foundation. And I was like, this is who also has had a lifetime suffering with depression and anxiety of herself. And it runs in her family. So I was talking to her about it and she did the research. And out of all the diplomas and degrees that are given to people in the field of mental health, the number for African Americans was so low. And it bothered me. And I said to her, you know why, right? And she was like, yeah. I said, because we don't talk about it in our community. My white friends, I have a standing appointment with my therapist. Girl, I'll see you after 3 o'clock. And I'm like, well, geez, I want a standing appointment. You know, I need one, you know. And so I was frustrated. I was like, because we don't talk about it. It's taboo in our community. We got to break that ice.
For black men especially.
Oh, especially.
It is like admitting you're weak.
You're deemed as weak, yeah. or you are misdiagnosed. Or oftentimes we're told to pray it away. Just pray it away and it'll be all better. You know, and it's not that easy. Or we're demonized because we have so much rage, which we have a lot of reasons to have all of this rage. But if you are culturally incompetent, then you don't know where this rage is coming from. Then a lot of times we get misdiagnosed. So there are a lot of trust issues. So there are a lot of things we need to, a lot of hurdles to leap over. But what I will say, the one thing I wanted to do was just bring attention to it. Break the ice. Take the tape off, and because we're suffering, and it took for someone like me, for someone that people look up to and they trust and they admire, to say, hey, you know what, I need a therapist. I have a therapist. It is okay to talk about, because the misconception of celebrities is that we got money and we're living our best life and we're living out our dreams, so life is perfect. But what you fail to realize is that what you see on camera is very different from when I go home. When they yell cut or it's a wrap, I have issues just like everybody else. And money doesn't make them go away. Success doesn't make them go away. If anything, it amplifies them.
Well, because then there's so much more pressure on you to be the role model, right?
All of that.
And to be the role model means you've always got to show that you're on top of things, you're in charge, you can handle it.
Or not even the role model, just your life being looked at under a microscope and everything being picked apart by people you don't even know and people that don't even really care about you. You know, it's tough. It's tough. So, you know, I have to speak to someone, and it can't be just your friends. You know, you need a professional. You need someone with a total objective, unbiased opinion. But you need to have someone who understands your struggles. You know, they have to be culturally competent.
And what you said about your character, you can't judge.
You can't.
If you're going to do someone a service, you need to believe that they're telling you the truth, and that you don't have to have an opinion on that.
Absolutely.
You're there to listen and to help them.
And give some constructive criticism or maybe some exercises to help them get through whatever challenges they may have. And everything doesn't need to be cured with a pill. And I think that's why a lot of, especially black men, are scared. Because a lot of those pills make you make your sexual drive go away.
Drives it down.
Yeah, so it's a lot, you know, it's a lot. But we're off to a good start with the Boris Lawrence Henson Foundation. And I think where we start is we get to the children. We get to them young. So we go to the schools and we put culturally competent therapists in the schools where these kids are coming. They're coming to school every day being expected to learn, where they're coming from very traumatic experiences at home.
Yeah.
They can't focus.
Sometimes they don't even have a meal.
Tell me about it. And then you expect them to learn, and there's no one for them to talk to. I remember before I booked Baby Boy, I was a substitute teacher, and I chose to work in the hood because no one goes, hey, I want to work in a very dangerous environment. So I did. And I remember I was a special ed substitute.
Oh, wow.
But I was thinking special ed as in physically disabled, not special ed because you haven't done your homework or because you're a problem child, then they slap a label on your head. That's telling you you'll never succeed in life, and then the kids are believing they'll never succeed in life. I went to a school where kids could walk. They had all of their wits about them. And I'm like, I thought I was coming to special ed. Because the first two schools, I had kids in wheelchairs and helped me put my life in perspective. They laughed, and I was like, what am I crying about? Then I go to the hood, and I go, well, we're the special ed kids. I get in the classroom. It's all black boys. My heart broke because I'm looking at them, and I'm like, well, he's forming complete sentences. There's nothing off.
No learning disability.
No learning disability. And so I pull out the paper. They go, uh-uh, I'm special. I'm special ed. I can't learn this. Oh, okay. Then I started to get to know them. The one kid, parents were in jail or on crack. They find him wandering all along the train tracks, which is in the backyard of the school, which disrupts the class, the school every day at a certain time, the train, you got to stop. And the kids are like, you know. it's hard enough to get there, keep their attention, and then you have to train. Like, who?
It's almost like it's on purpose, right?
Who does that?
Right.
So then I had to be clever about how to reach these boys, and I said, I know what I'll do. I'm gonna go get some McDonald's French fries, and I'm gonna put them on the table, and I'm gonna eat them. And I'm gonna say, if you do that problem, you can have this fry. And there was this one kid in particular who he kept saying, I can't do this. I don't know how. I'm special ed, so I don't know what I'm doing. So I got, you know, a couple of boys, and they were good. And then this one kid, I wanted to reach him. So I had to, I said, oh, very good. You could get some French fries. And he was over there like, I said, no, you don't get any French fries. You have to do this problem. Because I'm going to prove to you right now that you are not special ed, and don't you fall for any label somebody's trying to slap on your head. He did that problem. I said, you get all the fries you want. You know, and I don't know if I touched that kid. You know, I'm a substitute, so I'm moving around all the time.
You can't follow them.
My aim, my hope, my prayer was that I sparked something in him. Shortly after that, I booked Baby Boy. I hope he remembered Miss Henson, and I hope he remembered that I taught him that he's not special ed. That's just a label somebody put on you so that you won't succeed in life. And I hope he remembered. I pray. I just have to say this, I got sidetracked. I just remember going to the school and the kids were pointing out bullet holes. That's traumatic. And they're pointing it out to me like they're pointing out a pain. Look, Miss Henson, it was a shoot here last night. Look at the bullet hole. That's trauma. And they're supposed to come to school and learn. That's not good.
I'll tell you what, the academy's win by having you as a great actress is social work's loss. Because you would have been some powerhouse social worker.
Probably.
You're multi-talented, and you could have done anything. I think you probably would have done anything, and you would have done it well.
Except for math, because I failed that.
So that was obviously bullshit in Hidden Figures then, but everything else was good. It is such a pleasure to have you in South Africa.
Thank
I hope you.
You
get to spend a bit of time and actually take it all in, because there are just so many people in this country who love you, and you're doing a lot more than just giving people in America something of this representation that you talk about, because it's hitting home here, and that's very powerful stuff.
Thank you so much.
It's a great pleasure to meet you.
Pleasure's all mine.
This is CliffCentral.com.